May I ask you to open to the second book of Kings, 2 Kings, chapter 2. Now I'm quite aware of the fact that some time ago I dealt with this same passage here, but some of you may have forgot it, others perhaps weren't here. A number of years ago, there was a convention held, and some of the preachers were sitting at the table at the interval. One looked across the table at the other preacher, whose name happened to be the same as mine, but it wasn't me. He spelt it different. He spelt it the Irish way with two L's. Nevertheless, he was a Scotsman. Why he spelt it like the Irishman, I don't know. The other preacher looked across and he says, "You know, McNeil," he said, "that sermon you preached today," he said, "I heard you preach that sermon. Weren't you here?" He said, "5 years ago at the same convention." He said, "Well, let me say, yes, I was." He says, "I heard you preach that sermon then." He says, "Were you here?" He said, "Yes, I was here." He says, "I was one of the preachers." He says, "That's a strange thing." He says, "I can't remember a word you said." Then he remembered McNeil's sermon through and through, he said. Same sermon. "I knew another man who used to live just outside of Glasgow, R.D. Johnson. He was a wonderful minister of the word, at least I thought so, and so did a lot of others. I heard him preach a message one day on our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more eternal weight of glory." 4 years later, at the same conference, he preached the same message, used the same illustrations. I enjoyed it tremendously. Some complained. They said, "We've heard him preach that before." I said, "So did I, but I enjoyed it again this time." A friend of mine told me one day, he said, "Hey, we had a Scotsman down here, down in England. So we had a Scotsman down here at our Easter conference. Boy," he said, he gave us two tremendous sermons." He says, "I'll never forget them." I said, "What were they?" He says, he preached on our light affliction, which is but for a moment." I said, "Was his name R.D. Johnson?" He said, "Yeah, that was the man." I said, "Did he speak twice?" He said, "Yes, he did." I said, "Did he speak on the thorn in the flesh?" He said, "Yes, he did." I said, "Yeah, these were his two masterpieces." But you see, they were his masterpieces because he preached them out of experience. And when he preached them, people remembered them. Again, I remind you that the Lord Jesus repeated his ministry 2 weeks in succession. Yeah, on a Sunday night, he arrived, you remember, in the upper room. And can you remember the sermon he preached to them? "Peace be unto you." And Thomas wasn't there. He came back the next Sunday night and Thomas was there. And he preached the same sermon again. I often think for the benefit of Thomas. He says, "Peace be unto you." So if I'm repeating tonight something that you heard a long time ago, I trust that the second time you hear it, it'll get down. 2 Kings chapter 2. It's a man's last day on earth. God is about to take Elijah up to heaven. How would you spend your last day? Here's how Elijah spent his. "And it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. And the sons of the prophets that were at Bethel came forth to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? He said, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elijah said unto him, Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho. He said, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they came to Jericho. And the sons of the prophets that were at Jericho came to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? And he answered, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elisha said unto him, Tarry, I pray thee here, for the Lord has sent me to Jordan. He said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And the two went on. And 50 of the sons of the prophets went and stood to view afar off. They too stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle and wrapped it together and smote the waters, and they were divided hither and thither, so that they too went over on dry ground. It came to pass, when they were gone over, that Elijah said unto Elisha, Ask, what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. He said, Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee, but if not, it shall not be so. It came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more, and he took hold of his own clothes, rent them in two pieces. He took up also the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and went back, and stood by the bank of Jordan. So the Lord have blessed to us the reading of these verses. We've been following through now for some of those studies in the life of this wonderful man, Elijah. I remind you again, he was a man of like passions, such as we are. I mentioned that, I think, the very first night we started studying this man. For we're so apt to think that some of these Old Testament characters were like angels without wings, you know, that were different from us, and so easy for them, but it was no easy match for them at all. We have learned that Elijah lived in very difficult times. Is a man subject to the ups and downs of life, the same as ourselves. But he was truthful. He went on. There came the time, of course, as we saw in the last study, that he really wanted to die. He was in a state of depression. Now, I tried to emphasize this, and I'm going to emphasize it again tonight. It's just as possible for Christians to get into a state of depression as it is for the unsaved. Now, I've come across a lot of believers who are in a state of depression. Things seem to go against them. Yes, I have known Christians who came through such hard times that they had to spend time in a mental institution. 3 months before they were allowed home. All because that circumstances got them down. Now, when you see a person who's in a state of depression, whether it's a Christian or a non-Christian, try and have a measure of sympathy for them. Try and understand what it is that has brought on the depression. You see, there are things in life, perhaps, that come so quickly upon us that we're not ready for them. And they can break us up. You see, I'm talking from what I know, I passed through it. It took me 3 months to get over it. It's not easy. Elijah was in a state of depression. So severe was his depression, he says, I just want to die. Lord, take my life. Let me die. But God didn't answer that request of Elijah because God had something else for him to do. He had a work for him to do. Now, the different things he was to do, we're just leaving just now and concentrating on this one thing. He had to give some training to Elisha. He had to take that young man under his arm, as it were, And Elisha had to become, as it were, the servant of Elijah. Had to wash his feet and wash his hands, whichever way you like to take it, had to serve him. And in serving Elijah, he was going to learn his lessons. He was going to watch Elijah. Now, might I suggest this? Elisha must have been one of those 7,000 who had never bowed the knee to Baal. But Elijah didn't know him at that time until God pointed him out. And he says, you'll go and you will anoint Elisha. Having passed through that time of training and witnessed different things, now you come to this final chapter. It's the last day they're going to be together. He's going to lose his master. The time has come. His master's going to pass on, but he's not going down through the tunnel of death. He's going up over the golden bridge. He's going to be carried into heaven without dying. The whirlwind is going to take him up. Because God has something else for him to do. Remember I pointed this out in a previous study, that when you come to the New Testament, why, he brings Elijah down to the Mount of Transfiguration. And I'll make this suggestion that Elijah may be one of the witnesses that you read of when you come to the book of Revelation. Because it says it's appointed unto men once to die. And make no exception. Appointed men once to die. Elijah never died. So it seems feasible that he'll come back to earth again to be one of the witnesses. And of course, as a witness, he'll be slain. God then had other work for him to do. But the day came when he's going to leave Elisha. Now, I want you to notice some of the lessons we could learn from this chapter on the last day that these two men are together. I like what it says in verse 1, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. He went with him. The two of them were walking in unity. Now, let me mention this. They were not the same age. You know, they're so apt to draw a line these days and say, now you have passed over that line, you're now a senior citizen, you know. Used to be you weren't a senior citizen until you were 70 years of age. And then they dropped that and said you'll be a senior citizen at 65. And if you want to, you can become a senior citizen at 62. And to start drawing your pension then, so they say. And now the American Association of Retired People say, we'll take you in when you're 55, provided you pay your $5 a year. We'll reckon you one of those senior citizens. But they draw the line somewhere and they say, you're over the line, you're a senior citizen. And so you're allowed then to go and attend all the activities of the senior citizens, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're going to have the privileges, you've got to carry the badge, you know, the senior citizen. And then there's the thing for the young folks, and so on. Now, we're just as apt to do these things as the man of the world. But I'll tell you this. When I come to the Word of God, I find that God looks upon the church like a family. And he looks upon his people like a family. And Elijah was a much older man than Elisha, but it says, and they went with. Elijah went with Elisha. There was a mark of unity. Just the same as when you come to the New Testament, you'll find that Paul and Timothy worked together. And may I suggest that those of us perhaps who are a little older, we ought not to look down our nose at the younger folks. We ought to be encouraging them. And younger folks ought not to despise older folks. I never like to hear young folks speaking in a disparaging way of their parents. I knew one man who, he wasn't big, of course, he was quite a little fellow, and his three boys all grew bigger than their dad. And the youngest one was a bit perky, and one night he was saying something in the house and his father reprimanded him. He said, "Now," he got up and he was reprimanding his young son. The boy just put forth his hand, put it on his dad's chest, and he pushed him down the chair. He says, "Sit down." He says, "You're just a little old man now." I don't know what his father said to him after. But you see, it's not right for children to despise the parents. Neither is it right for the elder ones to despise younger ones. We work in unity. That's what we're supposed to do. Here was a mark of unity they went with. And notice where they went. The first stop was Gilgal. Now I'm going to suggest to you that every place that they went to, there was a lesson to be learned. Elijah was going to teach Elisha some great message. He took them down, they went to Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, "Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel, and I want you to tarry at Gilgal." Now, what would be the lesson at Gilgal? Let your mind go back. Wasn't that the place where the children of Israel came to when they were preparing to take possession of the land? And it was at Gilgal that the reproach of Egypt was rolled away. There were those who had come through, had been born in the wilderness. And they'd come through the wilderness. Now they're going in to take possession of the land of promise. But at Gilgal, they had to be circumcised. You see, this was something that had been neglected while they were coming through the wilderness. But wasn't it an ordinance of God for the children of Israel? But that ordinance was neglected? All right. When they came to Gilgal, that's where the sharp knives had to be used. And every male had to be circumcised at Gilgal. The reproach of Egypt had to be rolled away. They had to be separated, as it were, unto God. That to carry the mark of separation. He's teaching that, I suggest, to Elisha. And he would learn this lesson. It's here that we learn to be dependent on God, not on the power of the flesh. Dependence on God. May I suggest that's one of the first lessons that we've all got to learn in our Christian life. We've got to learn the lesson of our dependence upon God, not himself. But he says, "I'm going down to Bethel." And Elisha said, "And I'm going with you. I will not leave thee." So they went down to Bethel. Now, if they're going down to Bethel, here's the mark of humility. Going down. Today, the great thing in life is getting up. How far can I climb in the ladder of fame? How long will it take me to be the boss man in this establishment? When will I get my first promotion? When will I have my first raise in my wages? What is the limit of what I can earn? That these are some of the things they're asking. These things might be all right in their place. But is that the thing in Christian life? The mark of humility. They went down. But where did they go down to? They went down to Bethel. Ah, there's some lessons to be learned there. If we have to learn the lesson in humility, how are we going to learn it? Bethel? Now, two things I'll suggest to you. There may be other things. I'll suggest two things you learn at Bethel. As you stand at Bethel, Elijah might be able to say to Elisha, "Elisha, do you remember Jacob, our ancestor, the man whose name was changed to Israel? When Jacob, you remember, was running away from home, going away to Padan Aram, that first night out, was it Bethel? Oh, he was a lonely pilgrim that night. All he had was his little bundle and his staff. And he lay down to take a well-earned rest. He'd been a long journey that day. And he lay down at Bethel, and it was that night at Bethel he saw that ladder set up on earth and touching heaven. 'Twas at Bethel that he saw the angels of God ascending and descending. I used to wonder about that. Why didn't it say descending and ascending? If angels are up there, they've got to come down first. No, Jacob said, I saw them ascending and descending. Why? Because they're servants. They were going up first to get their orders and coming down to execute them. They had to get their orders first so they go up and come down. And he saw the Lord standing above that ladder. The Lord had everything in command. And you remember it was there at Bethel when he got up in the morning, he raised the pillar and he performed a little act of worship. And it was there that God made the promise to him that he would look after him and bring him back. At Bethel then you learn this outstanding lesson of the presence of God. Now first of all at Gilgal is to learn the lesson of dependence upon God. Now he's teaching him the lesson of the presence of God. There's something else you learn at Bethel. You go to the other side of the coin and Elijah would be able to learn, but look, while our ancestor Jacob learned to worship God and worshiped him here and claimed the premise of God here, also don't forget it's right here that they've raised that idol, a calf. It's right here they're worshipping Baal. Our nation has gone to idolatry. And the place that ought to have been indicative of the presence of God has been made the center of idolatry worship. What a lesson to learn. But he says, we're not going to stay here, we're going on. Elijah said unto him, Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho. No, he says, I'm going. The Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. Here's the mark of fidelity. No matter what else happens, Elijah, I'm staying by you to the bitter end. There's nothing going to come between you and me. If God has sent you to anoint me, I'm staying with you till the Lord takes you away. Jericho. I wonder what lesson they learned at Jericho. I suggest to you that here they learned something regarding the power of God. Have we lost our grip on that lesson, the power of God? Our God isn't dead. Oh, at Jericho, what could the people do? It was a walled city, you remember. And they didn't have any bulldozers or war machines to go against that walled city. It was the funniest kind of battle that men had ever seen. A whole crowd of them came round carrying a funny little box, four men carrying it on their shoulder. So many going before them and so many coming after them. And there was a man with a trumpet, the ram's horn trumpet. And they marched just round the walls once and away back to their camp. Why, I'm sure that the people in Jericho must have thought it was a great joke when they were marching away again. They would run up to the walls to have a vision of this. They wouldn't have any cameras in these days or they would have taken pictures of it. The second day, here they come again. Same thing happened. Now for 6 days. On the seventh day, round they went. Ah, but they didn't turn away then. They kept going round and round and round until the final time. Then they blew the trumpet and the walls went flat. Now they didn't fall over. Because they were just as broad as they were high. God opened the ground and they went down. The walls of Jericho fell. The children of Israel went in. Captured that great city with all its inhabitants. The power of God. We'll read of that in Joshua chapter 6. Now these two men have come to Jericho. The older man would be able to instruct Elisha. Elisha, you've learned your lesson that in your work for God, you must learn to depend on God. You must learn something about the presence of God. You must learn to abhor idolatry. But now you must also learn something about the power of God. You can't do anything in your own power. If you're going to accomplish anything for God, it will only be in God's power. That same lesson is taught in the New Testament. The Lord said to his own after he had trained them for 3.5 years, perhaps. He said, now you're not ready yet. You'll wait at Jerusalem until you be endued with the power from on high. When the promise of the Father is kept, ye shall receive the power of the Holy Spirit coming upon you. Then you'll be my witnesses. First in Jerusalem, Judea, on to Samaria, then on to the uttermost parts of that. But you must have the power that comes from God. Elisha was taught this. Now he said, if you care, you can stop here. But the Lord has told me I've got to go on. I'm going down to Jordan. Jordan isn't too far from Jericho. And he says, I'm going with you. So they two went on. Here was continuity. In this day's march nearer home. And they came to Jordan. Now, as they stood on the bank of the river Jordan, I wonder what lessons they could learn there. I'm sure they had a great conversation there. They would know something again that was at Jordan that their ancestors learned something about the presence of God. Jordan, you remember, was the point where it was the way of exit coming out of the wilderness. It was the way of entry coming in to the promised land. If you were coming up there now, you would pass over Jordan by the Allenby Bridge. Allenby Bridge was destroyed during one of the wars there, but they threw a temporary one over. I've shown some of you here the picture of it, I think. And when I saw it, Maya started to sweat. I got all excited when I saw the Allenby Bridge. It was named after General Allenby. But the reason I got excited about it, I noticed that at the present time, the emergency Allenby Bridge was what they call the Bailey Bridge. I got so excited about it because I worked on the Bailey Bridges. I mean, what they call the lower boom for the Bailey Bridges for a whole year. And when I saw it, I wondered if I had parked in that. I wanted to go and examine it, but they wouldn't let me. Bailey Bridge. That's where you would go over Jordan now. There were no bridges for them. And when they went over, it was a time when the river would be at a flood level. And God opened up the Jordan, and it was the way by which they came over from the wilderness into the promised land. It was an exit. It was an entry. Now they're facing in the other direction. And Elijah says, we're going over. And he took that mantle, wrapped it up, smote the waters, and God again divided the river Jordan, and over they went, as if it were on dry ground. So they're over Jordan. Here is the sign of victory. So they too went over on dry ground. What a picture of victory at the end of the life of Elijah. When they speak of Jordan, you know, they usually speak of Jordan as going into death, passing over Jordan and so on. On Jordan's stormy banks I stand, you've heard them sing that. But here he comes to Jordan, he goes over on dry ground, walks through, just the same as the children of Israel went through on dry ground going in to possess the land. But hurriedly, our time's gone. When you come to verse 11, it came to pass, as they still went on and talked. I like that. They still went on and talked. Now, they wouldn't be talking about anybody. They were talking to each other. having a conversation. They went on and talked. And behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire and parted them both asunder. That was the Lord's doing. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven, arriving in glory. What a touchdown that must have been. Oh, what a takeoff it was. He didn't need to come down to Cape Kennedy to take off for heaven. Some of them have taken off from there and haven't arrived at their destination. He took off. The whirlwind took him up. God came along, as it were, and parted Elijah and Elijah. It's time now. Elijah watches his master go up. Up he goes in the whirlwind. What a takeoff. But oh, what an arrival. You know, I think when we get to heaven, we'll ask him what it was like. I wonder, would there be an army of angels waiting to welcome him home? I wonder if Moses was there to give him a great welcome, and Abraham, and others. We're not told much about that, are we? No, we're told what went on down here after he went up there. And you know, we've parted with a lot of loved ones in our days, haven't we? And I've often wondered what the arrival was like. Someday we'll know. We'll know what the arrival is like when we get there. But someday we're going to have a takeoff. Someday a trumpet will sound. Oh, it won't be a chariot, it won't be fire. The trumpet will sound and the voice of the archangel will be heard, and the graves will open and the dead in Christ shall rise. We who are alive and remain shall be changed in a moment. Then we'll be caught up together to meet the Lord in the air. What a takeoff. There's nothing like it has ever happened before. And there's nothing like it will happen after. It'll be unique. Just as this was unique. And we're going up. And oh, what an arrival that will be. What a touchdown. When we go into his presence to see him and to be like him. And Elisha picks up the mantle. And Elisha's got to return and do his duty. And Elisha goes on to say, where is the God of Elijah? Beloved, the God of Elijah still lives today. You and I may be men and women of like passions as Elijah was. We can still trust the same God. We can still do exploits for him. I trust we'll take our lessons from him and be prepared to go on to final victory.